White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 464.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AAU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with TheWarEagleReader.com, and all of our great supporters, the AAU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we have come up once again for our listeners that listened, 2 weeks ago. Last week, I went ahead and posted the second half of We Believed, covering the last few years of Tommy Tuberville, 2005 through 2008. But the week before that, you had the great idea that we should do the occasional classic game and cover it like it was recent, like it was over the weekend. And so we did the West Virginia 2009 rain game 2 weeks ago. So if you folks listening now haven't heard that, go back into our archives just 2 short weeks. Just go to auwishbone.podbean.com. You can also go to www.auwishbone.com. And you can just go back, just scroll down two episodes, and you'll see us talking about West Virginia. So, John, what game are we talking about this week?
The 1994 LSU at Auburn game.
Oh, man. Another instant classic. Okay, so we both just rewatched it over the weekend, like it was actually live. And there's so much to talk about here, and we're going to break it down basically drive by drive and everything surrounding it. But before I forget, I've got to say up front that there was one thing about this game that really jumped out at me, is that for the last, how many years ago was that? 36?
Mm-hmm.
No, 26. God, I'm not that old.
26.
Yeah. 04, 14, 15. Yeah. 26 years. So for the last, 20 years, I've really only watched the 20-minute highlight package, and really all those highlights ever show is the fourth quarter. And so I don't know about anybody else, but I had forgotten. The thing I remembered about the first three quarters was we had no offense and LSU scored. We just had no offense. That was what I remembered. By the end of the game, that's true. There's a lot of absolutely insane, weird things about this game. Tell me if I'm wrong here, okay? Tell me if I'm wrong now that you've presumably watched the entire game. Auburn had a better offense the first three quarters of this game than we had in the fourth quarter by far. And yet we won the game in the fourth quarter.
Oh, yes. Yes. Now, it's relative. Offense wasn't good in the first three quarters. It was just okay. But yes, in the fourth quarter, it was non-existent. And that's when the fireworks happened.
In the first three quarters, it was Patrick Nix probably completing about 40-45% of his passes, which sounds horrible today, but was about as good as you could get there for a while. And he was handing the ball or pitching the ball to Steven Davis, who was running really well. And in the fourth quarter, we took Patrick Nix out, and we took Steven Davis out, and the fourth quarter was just almost all a very young Damian Craig running for his life and getting sacked, which was terrible. I didn't blame them wanting to try something different, but I felt like the offense in the first three quarters was always right on the verge of being decent, and it just... something happened every drive. Something stupid would happen, whether it was a penalty or a turnover or a sack or just, something. We'll go through it, but it just seemed like in the first three quarters, the offense was good enough to have won this game straight up without the defense doing what it did. But it just never could get over the hump. And then they, in the fourth quarter, just made wholesale changes. And I don't think we had any prayer of winning this game if it hadn't played out the way it did.
Well, but the other thing that played into the – it's not just an offense-defense dynamic. The special teams were a big piece of this game, and we'll talk about that.
I mean, that's true.
They were responsible for some of the hole that Auburn got into in terms of having to overcome.
That's true. Okay. So the first thing I want to say about this game – I had forgotten this. It's because we're so used now, you know, you've got the CBS one or two games, maybe a doubleheader. You've got ESPN, ESPN2. You got the SEC Network. So there's a whole lot of venues for SEC football. I mean, every SEC football game is on TV every Saturday in the modern days now. And none of it's cheap and cheesy. Even the SEC Network is still basically ESPN, you know. So they're all good. They're all broadcast well. But this was an Auburn-LSU game when Auburn was undefeated and had won like 13, 14 games straight. And yet, you know what game, you know where this was broadcast, John?
This was the Jefferson Pilot.
The 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
That's right.
Very nice.
And it It played like a time slot of death, didn't it? I mean, it seemed like we had not the offense never got the wake up call. Like I said, it was marginal in the first half, but the defense certainly woke up when they had to. We've got some stats about that. So I had kind of noted some of the players that were in this game as they were called out. I'll mention LSU. This was Curly Hallman coaching. Some background on that real quick. I believe he had been coaching at Southern Miss they were pretty good, right? And they did really well with him, and so LSU hired him.
They hired him because he beat Auburn and Alabama.
That's right. He was the coach for Brett Favre.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow. So LSU, that would be when they got rid of Archer, right? Mike Archer. And they brought... this is back when the LSU fight song, in terms of their coaching hires and fires, the LSU fight song was because they had Mike Archer, and they fired him after he took him to the Sugar Bowl a couple of times and brought in Curly Hallman from Southern Miss. And then they got rid of him later and ended up with Jerry DiNardo. In fact, I've mentioned this before. Auburn has been directly responsible in the modern era for the firing of at least three LSU coaches. We got Curly Hallman fired at the game we're talking about now by the end of the season. We got Jerry DiNardo fired after getting his tail beaten by us in 1999 with our 5-6 team. And we got Les Miles fired when he lost the Loser Leave Town 2016 game to Gus. So it's not just that we've played LSU coaches and then they got fired. It's that we had games with each one of those three that at the end of the year, if not the end of the day, the LSU administration said, no, we're going to go a different direction now after that Auburn game. I mean, three times, John, three times. It's crazy. So this was Curly Hallman. Their quarterback was Jamie Howard, who I was pushing for the Heisman Trophy after this game. Running back was Jermaine Sharp. I have no memory of that guy. Usually LSU running backs are pretty memorable, you know. I mean, you know, I can remember the one that they had before him and I say that and then I can't remember, but, you know, they've had several really great running backs at LSU, quite a few. And Jermaine Sharp and the other one was Toomer. I have no memory of those guys. They just didn't register much for me. And then they had Eddie Kinnison as a receiver and running back punts, and he was really, really good. What do you remember about this LSU team, the coaches, the personnel, all that?
Jamie Howard was a former minor league baseball prospect turned quarterback. Eddie Kinnison was, for a long time, the best LSU receiver they ever had. Mm. He was a great player who made plays. He was a receiver and a kick returner. I think he had the career receiving record until a few years ago.
Mm.
And They also had a giant tight end on this team, David LaFleur.
Yes.
Who's a huge guy who gave us some problems. That's what I really remember about that LSU team. The defense was, defense. Know, was solid. But, again, this is people – you need to not think about LSU in the modern terms, certainly not in the 2019 terms.
No.
You know, this was 90s LSU. It was a long time before Saban got there. They were still very inconsistent. They weren't great recruiters or developers or anything. And it was, you know, a different era for them.
Well, the one thing that they had consistently on defense in the 90s was pretty good defensive linemen. They had Booger McFarland, you know, a while. The one that was on this team that jumped out literally at us was Gabe Northern.
Yes.
He chased Nicks and Damian Craig all over the backfield throughout this game. He was very disruptive for them. So Auburn had won 13 in a row. Hard to believe. Here we are midway through, pretty much through the 1994 season now. Terry Bowden has still not lost a game at this point. I noted this is only the third year that we played LSU every season. So this was a very young rivalry. Remember, up through 1991, we played LSU about once every 6-7 years. And we hadn't played them really 88, 89 we played them. And then wouldn't have played them again for years. But in 92, when the conference separated, we ended up in the same division. So 92 was the year we started playing them every year. And we won a big game in 92. We went down and kicked their butts in, I can't remember. Yeah, 93 we went down and kicked their butts in LSU. This was the fourth year in a row that we won because we'd beaten them in 89. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we beat them in 89, 92, 93, and this was 94. So 4 years in a row we had beaten LSU, four games in a row we had beaten LSU. Now I want to look at real quickly at some of the players that we had so that our listeners will have some sense of what Auburn team this was. Terry Bowden was the head coach in his 13th game, still hadn't lost. The offensive coordinator was his older brother, Tommy, who would later go to Tulane and then Clemson. And Wayne Hall was still carried over from Pat Dye, the defensive coordinator. What are your thoughts on our coaching staff at that point?
I mean, I think that both the coordinators were still doing a good job. And Terry still, you know, I think had that kind of, the kind of magic at that point. You know, we were still riding the wave with him.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I'm always kind of 50-50 on if it's like Terry was a genius and just he knew exactly what he was doing, or Terry was as surprised as the rest of us. You know, I'm not sure. It's kind of like if you have no idea how to play pool. You've never played billiards before, and you walk up and you hit the break and you knock every ball in on your first shot. That's kind of Terry. It's like, everybody's looking at that and going, well, is this guy like a pool shark, or is that like the luckiest thing you ever saw? And I look back at Terry, and I think it was kind of 50-50. I think that a lot of it was he took Pat Dye's last few recruiting classes and gave them, you know, just like it was very much like what Gus did in 2013 to Chizik's last bunch of classes, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Gus came in 2013 and took a 3-9 team and took him to the national championship game. Terry came in and took a 5-5-1 team and took them undefeated. And then they won their next 9 after that. They won 20 in a row. It's still hard to imagine that.
It is, but in both cases, I think that's a very good analogy because there's a lot of talent on this team. A lot of talent.
Yeah.
And I think what they needed was, invigoration of youth and energy and new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And some new enthusiasm and energy. And I think they got that from Terry and his staff.
Yeah, because it's weird. Terry came in, but Tommy Bowden had already been our offensive coordinator before. And Wayne Hall had been our defensive coordinator before. So the main difference was that now I guess Terry was calling the plays in conjunction with Tommy. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't very different. You know, it was almost the same coaching staff. You know, the linebacker coach was still there, Joe Witt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure the strength and conditioning coach was probably the same. I mean, it really is just a change of scenery type thing in the coach's office. I guess he did things slightly different from Dye. So the players on this team, here's just some of the names that jumped out at me as I was watching. And this is an Auburn team that had a It had a decent few defensive linemen, enough to compete. It was really thin at linebacker, but they played over their heads, I would say. But what made this Auburn defense good enough to win 11 games the year before and 9 this year and tie one was the secondary. This team had a secondary. I would probably take this team's secondary over any in Auburn history, including one that had Carlos Rogers. Because if Carlos Rogers is a 10, this secondary had like 4 9s on it, you know?
Yes, yes, 100%.
So here's what you got. You got Patrick Nix with Damian Craig backing him up. Nix was a junior this year, and Craig was a sophomore. Yeah, he's 94 and 5. Yeah, he was a freshman. He was redshirt freshman. He redshirted in 93. Your running backs were Steven Davis, of course, and then at fullback, Joe Frazier, who was hurt for this game, and Harold Morrow, who was always kind of a journeyman for us. And then Fred Beasley must have just been starting out or something, because Beasley was a good player for us, but he didn't play much in this game.
He was a young player. Morrow and Frazier were older. I mean, this is amazing, like, that we had Morrow and Fred Beasley both played in the NFL about 8 years apiece at fullback.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they were both on this team. And the Frazier was the starter, I think, over both of them.
That's right. Yeah, he started out as a tailback and then ended up as the fullback. And he was a tough guy. I believe on the 91 team, he was the starting running back.
Yes.
So we had Willie Anderson on the offensive line. He's always worth mentioning. Played for the Bengals forever and was great. The receivers included Frank Sanders, Tyrone Goodson, Thomas Bailey. I'm not sure if Karsten Bailey was around yet, or Eric Lowe. Yeah, Eric Lowe, Karsten Bailey. Yeah.
Poor, I think, was on this team.
Yeah. We had a lot of good to decent receivers. Of course, Frank Sanders is an all-time great. Let me ask you this question. I was debating this with some people on Twitter last week. If you had to pick one Auburn receiver to build your receiving core around, who would you pick? And, I mean, somebody said to me it'd have to be between Frank Sanders and... Oh, crap. I forgot who
Ronnie Daniels?
No, I said Ronnie Daniels. They said Frank...
Lawyer Tillman?
No, it wasn't Lawyer. There was another one that was really good, and now I'm blanking out on it. But I said it would either be... I said I would probably get Ronnie Daniels, because Ronnie Daniels could catch the ball as well as Frank Sanders or any of the others, and Ronnie Daniels could break tackles. He dragged people into the end zone with him.
Yeah, he was a great... I mean, Frank Sanders is a great receiver. I mean, I think... Obamanu, Romishudu.
Oh, it was Courtney Taylor was the other one.
Courtney Taylor.
It was, which of these three would you take? Frank Sanders, Courtney Taylor, or Ronnie Daniels? I mean, you can't go wrong with any of them, but which one would you take?
I mean, I love Courtney Taylor, but he's much more of a possession guy than those other two guys. Those other two guys can be take over the game. I think I would take Sanders, baby.
You take Sanders, and I'll take Ronnie Daniels, and we'll see what happens.
I think Daniels is better with the ball in his hands, breaking tackles and running. And I think Sanders is better at like jumping and making the big catch in the end zone.
Yeah, it's true. He was really good at the fade. Just ask Florida. That's true. And Thomas Bailey had been around, I think, since 90. He may have redshirted or something. He was our punt returner, but he didn't have a good season in 94, but he started out really good. On the defensive line, Willie Whitehead and Gary Walker were just solid and dependable. We didn't have a lot of depth on that defensive line, nothing like we have today. And then Jason Miska was the storybook, you know, linebacker, the kid from Connecticut or whatever with all the tattoos that came down and when that was unusual, you know. And just a little scrawny white kid that went out there and played way over his head and was the starting linebacker. That's amazing, you know. And then Chris – oh, yeah, but here's your secondary. We had Chris Schelling Chris Schelling, Brian Robinson, Ken Alvis, and was it Fred Smith?
Del McGee and Fred Smith.
That's right.
Both played the other cornerback spot. Fred Smith was –
he had
like
been injured.
All SEC freshman a couple years before, and then he had a knee injury in 93.
Mm-hmm. So look at that. Chris Schelling, Brian Robinson, Ken Alvis, Fred Smith, Del McGee. I mean, that's a heck of a defensive backfield.
And I think, like, legitimately, Schelling, Robinson, and Alvis were all legitimate all SEC players that year.
Yes.
And I think Schelling was up for the Thorpe Award, I'm pretty sure.
Man. I mean, look what they did in this game, and look what they did to Florida's quarterbacks, both of them, in 93 and 94. just embarrassed them both. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous. Let's see. All right. So you want to break down the game a little bit? We can go through it. I mean, we don't have to do every play, but I took some notes.
I want to start before we get into the nitty gritty of the game. I want to ask you this question. What was the mentality of the Auburn fan base coming into this game? We were ranked 11th. LSU was unranked. We had won 14 games in a row under Terry. You know, we were year two and hadn't lost yet.
Right.
So kind of what was the Auburn fan base's feeling coming into this game?
Well, I don't remember what you and I talked about, but I remember that our friend Dennis was bringing his new girlfriend, who he's been married to for 20-something years now. This was the first game that he brought her to. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, when things were getting dark, I remember at one point thinking, oh, man, Dennis picked the wrong game to bring his girlfriend to. Because I feel like we went into this game very confident. I feel like we were, like you said, we were ranked. We knew that our team had limitations, but we knew it's like I've said before, the 93 and 94 and really 95 teams, they weren't juggernauts, but they had, and they didn't have a lot of depth anywhere. But they had like all SEC caliber players, at least one at most positions, from like, you know, from your Frank Sanders to Willie Whitehead to Chris Schelling. You know what I mean? They had somebody at all. The punter?
Terry Daniel. We didn't mention him.
Terry Daniel, let me put it this way. For those that don't know, Terry Daniel was punting the ball so well in 93 and 94 that Jackie Sherrill at Mississippi State accused him of cheating. Jackie Sherrill said they were putting helium in the balls to make him punt better. And people are pointing out there was helium in the ball. It wouldn't go as far because it would be lighter, you know. But you remember that?
But I do remember that controversy. That was spectacular. And I mean, I think it's not, I would easy for me to say he's the best punter in Auburn history.
Yes. He averaged right at 50 yards coming into this game. He had one bad punt in this game, I remember.
He did, and it was a big one.
But other than that, yeah, it cost us a touchdown, didn't it? But or a field goal. But yeah, otherwise, he was putting them back on like the 10 yard line every time. So. Problem was they were getting first downs. Is that how you remembered? I remember being very, yes. You know, you're thinking, well, it's LSU, you got to be careful, but I felt like we're going to win.
No, I mean, again, LSU was unranked.
Mm-hmm.
We had game, and then we had like a cupcake after this, and then Kentucky, and they were sucky Kentucky at that time. And so we were feeling really good about where we were at this point. And then this game kind of, I think a lot of that Jefferson Pilot early times thought biting us in the rear end thing.
It did. Well, you remember, it's weird. I just said that LSU had won. I mean, that we had. This would be our fourth game in a row, 89, 92, 93, 94. We won four in a row with them. But then in 95 and 96, everything that went wrong in this game came back to haunt us again in 95 and 96. And in those two games, they didn't keep throwing the ball in the fourth quarter. We didn't score. I think we scored like 10 points in 95 and 96 or something around there. Their defensive line, I said before with Gabe Northern and everything, their defensive line in the mid-90s was not bad at all. And it absolutely controlled our offense 3 years in a row. 94, 95, 96, we couldn't do anything. The only time we were able to do anything against their defense was in 97 when Damian Craig was a senior and had all those receivers. So, so we felt good about it. But at the beginning of the game, I felt like, oh, look, how did we have to do everything crazy in the fourth quarter? We're very competitive in this game. So let's break it down. So LSU gets the ball, keeps the ball 6.5 minutes, and we block a long field goal attempt. So there's another special teams moment, maybe game-saving moment, since they could have kicked a field goal in the fourth quarter instead of having to go for a touchdown.
Huge.
Another moment where the offense was not involved in saving this game.
Something positive happens and the offense is not on the field.
Yeah, that's right. So now here comes one of many moments where I say that something went wrong that just drove me crazy with the offense, right? Because we came out, we did great. We pitched it to Steven Davis for like 5 or 10 yards, and we were rolling and rolling. Nix does a 33-yard screen pass to Harold Morrow getting over into the LSU side of the field. We get all the way down to the LSU 37-yard line. Man, the offense is looking great. The offense is looking great. And it's fourth and like one or something, and we don't get the first down. We go for it on the 37-yard line. It would have been like, what, a 54-yard field goal.
Yep.
And we go for it. We don't make it. And I don't know if – I didn't know if this was the one or not, but there were a couple of moments where we went for it on third and short or fourth and short, and the referee spotted it like 2 yards back from where the running back was.
This is the other thing we have to say about this game. This just glaring, watching a game from 1994. No replay.
Oh, yeah.
No instant replay in this game. The Nothing. Spots on the ball were terrible. There were several egregious calls. I think there were a couple of turnovers or non-turnovers that were just terrible. So,
hey, there's one in the fourth quarter involving Damian Craig, and I'm like, don't even want to go.
We'll talk about that.
We'll get to that. All right.
I think the lack of replay was huge in this game.
Yes, absolutely huge. You're right. In a lot of ways, in a bunch of plays. So we hold LSU, and they punt, and Damian Craig starts coming in for the first play of every drive, which is interesting. Steven Davis has some good runs, but he fumbles at midfield. So, again, our first drive ended in their territory because of a bad spot. Our second drive ends with a turnover. You're going to hear that again. The possession so far was 7:48 for LSU, 3:33 for Auburn. So already you can see that their plan is to keep the ball, keep our offense off the field, and grind it out. So they punt to our 30. Damian Craig runs one play again. More big running from Davis. I made a note here that Steven Davis just looks so big and tough, just abusing their defense. I will never understand why we didn't use him more in the fourth quarter. Isn't that what you do, is put the big bruiser in the fourth quarter when they're worn down?
Yes. And as the game went along, we went to more kind of spread formations and shotgun formations where we weren't giving the ball to Steven Davis, and I think you're right.
So we're just not consistent. Nix is 5 for 8 for 56 yards. Terry Daniels punting great. So at the end of the first quarter, and the only other thing I had to note was that Fred Beasley had a good reception, but it came back on a block in the back. So once again, we had a big gain in the LSU territory, and we had a block in the back that brought it back. So every time we get something going, we shoot ourselves in the foot.
And a penalty that would have been overturned in a replay because it wasn't actually a block in the back. He caught him on the front shoulder.
Oh, God. So, all right, so here's the end of the first quarter, very even. LSU, 29 rushing yards in the whole first quarter, 29 rushing yards, 27 passing yards for a total of 56, whereas Auburn has 43 rushing yards and 58 passing yards, a total of 101. So in the first quarter, Auburn has almost double. It's not a lot. It's not a lot, but Auburn has almost double the offense of LSU in the first quarter. And I'm watching that first quarter and saying, this is not the game I remember, John.
Well, and I remember this total that at the end of the first quarter, we had 101 yards.
Okay? Yeah, because at the end of the fourth quarter, we got like 102. That's what it seems like. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, in the first quarter, we have 101 yards. But they have us on time of possession, but we have almost twice as many yards. And again, I'm looking at this and going, I'm scratching my head and going, this is not the game I remember from the highlights and from all the talk over the years. You know, the talk was that we couldn't get anything going the entire game, and they got ahead like 20-something to nothing or whatever, you know, and then we blow it all up in the fourth quarter. And that's not really accurate. It's kind of... But it's not really. All right, so second quarter, LSU. This is just as funny that for all the plays that we know where they turn the ball over or let us score or whatever, there were some where they did, and they were very lucky they didn't give up even more points. Because on the first play of the second quarter, LSU fumbled a pass on their own 6-yard line, and Auburn recovered it on LSU's 6, okay? And it was ruled incomplete. There's another replay we could look at. So they punt, more running by Davis. We get all the way down to the LSU 27-yard line. And I have a note here that so far our offense looks a lot better than I remember it. I remembered us barely making a first down all day. We're moving the ball. We are getting into their territory. We just keep making key mistakes. And like you say, there's no replay to double check it. So we do kick a field goal, Matt Hawkins, and it's 3-0 Auburn. But on the very next drive, LSU on their own 24 throws a pass and Brian Robinson tips it. So this, again, they fumbled on the previous drive on their own 6 and we got it, but it was ruled incomplete. And on the next drive, Brian Robinson has his hand on the ball and it bounces off his hand. An LSU player, whoever it was, catches it and goes 76 yards for the touchdown. Again, there's like, you know, we know that there's like 7 or 8 amazing plays where something happens like that in our favor. What's amazing is how many times something like that happens and it doesn't. You know, where we have our hands on the interception or we recover the fumble and it's incomplete or whatever. I mean, it's just amazing to me that we could have scored 70 in this game and never scored an offensive touchdown.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it won't be the last time by far that an Auburn defensive back gets his hand on the ball, but also just goes to show, like, they were getting a bead on Howard and what he was doing and where he was going.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that will definitely be ramifications later. Oh, now there's just, I had to mention the moment where the referee gets laid out by an Auburn player, and they have to put him on the bench and tend to him for like half an hour, poor guy. And meanwhile, our long snapper, I believe Brian Brinsfield, got hurt on a kickoff, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't call anything on that. Let's see. So now LSU is starting to do various stunts up front. I was watching how in the first quarter their defense wasn't getting any penetration, but in the second quarter they start getting to nicks. And so we have to start. And Terry Bowden was very big on the quick screens. Terry Bowden liked the little drop back and quick dump it off in the flat type screens. And we had to start doing that on quick pitches and quick passes. The run up the middle was not there. The fullbacks weren't getting anything after the first quarter. And Nick starts taking sacks. So he punts. We punt. And there's a neck injury to an Auburn special teams player. This would have been targeting. But again, there was no targeting and there was no replay.
It was a different era in terms of the hitting, obviously.
I wonder if they would have called targeting on the guy that hit the referee. it couldn't be helmet to helmet, though, because he didn't have a helmet on. Helmet to cap. All right, so LSU, on their first play, we stop them for a big loss back to about their 10-yard line. And on this is where I'm going with this. So on the first play, LSU runs a sweep to the right, and we're all over the guy and make him lose like 10 yards all the way back to his own 10. You'd think they'd never run that play again, but they run the exact same play again to the same side, and we do the same thing, and this time they fumble into the end zone, and Chris Schelling recovers it for a touchdown. So everybody remembers the interceptions in the fourth quarter, but don't forget, we also had a fumble recovery for a touchdown that gave us our only touchdown up until then.
It was a big moment in the game, and it was, you know, we took the lead. Yeah. We got the crowd back in the game. It was
briefly.
Big.
But what happens on the extra point?
We missed. Again, I think the long snapper being
that
mattered here.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that, but you're absolutely right. So it's 9-7 Auburn, midway through the second quarter. LSU, we stopped them, but we're called for very controversial pass interference on 3rd and long. That keeps their drive going. This is crazy. That drive goes 17 plays in 7 minutes and 8 seconds for 68 yards, and they get a field goal. It's not often you go 17 plays in 7 minutes and you get a field goal. So now it's 10-9 LSU. And I just noted here the first half is a lot lower scoring than I remembered. I mean, I guess I remembered that Auburn didn't have many points, but for some reason I was thinking LSU's points were more spread out, but they really scored more of their points in the second half too. So far I feel like we're to halftime now. The offense hasn't looked that bad, but we've only scored 3 points on offense. We even missed an extra point. And LSU has had at least 2 very time-consuming drives that just kept our offense such as it was off the field. So they're getting worn down, our offense, our defense. So Nick's in the first half, 6 of 14 for 66 yards. I think he was like 56 yards in the first half, in the first quarter. So he's got like, he's gone like 1 for 7 for 10 yards in the second quarter.
Yes. It's again, it was, I remember 101 yards at the end of the first quarter. It's not good.
Not good, no. All right, so we go through halftime, and we get to the third quarter. And in the third quarter, this was interesting. They noted at halftime that Auburn's at this point in the season, Auburn had not scored a point in the fourth quarter all year. This was game three, but we did not score in the fourth quarter of our first two games. And the weird thing is, I don't guess our offense does score a point in the fourth quarter in this game. It's all defense. Okay, there's another one of these cases. Auburn gets the kickoff. We're moving the ball, and we get to third and one, and they give it to Steven Davis, which should be a guaranteed first down, and he gets it, and they spot him like 2 yards back, and we have to punt. And
When I saw the run, he came in, and then they brought the chain in after that. I was shocked.
Absolutely.
Did not take first down.
Yes. It's just like, you're like, wait a minute. Clearly the chain and the little orange thing and where Steven Davis ended up, none of those three things have any relation to each other. They're all completely unmoored from each other in this game, right? There's where the ball carrier takes the ball, and then there's where they mark it, and then there's where the orange marker is, and then there's where the chain reaches to, and those things are all completely separate from each other. They have no correlation at all. It's so weird. So, okay. So LSU gets a good punt return up to the 42, and then it is intercepted. Chris Schelling with the second turnover and first interception of the game. And this is an interception that nobody remembers, right? I mean, because it's the one that we don't run back for a touchdown.
But it was still big because, you know, they had good field position. Kennison had a really good punt return that gave them good field position. So it was a big interception.
And as you said a minute ago, our secondary's figuring him out.
Yes.
So that we go from almost intercepting to intercepting but not scoring to intercepting and scoring as the game progresses. That's a definite progression there. Okay, so Nix is passing the ball pretty well, and then he's hit before he can pass, and he fumbles. And this would happen again later with Craig, we'll see. And so once again, we really looked like we were getting something going, and there's another mistake. So again, it's all the way through three quarters, it's not that our offense can't even move the ball. It's that we keep shooting ourselves in the foot after we start moving the ball. Every single drive ends with something stupid happening. Okay, so then LSU has the ball, and their running back fumbles. So here's another turnover. That's turnover number three, I guess, already, right? Because they fumbled the ball into the end zone in the first quarter or the second quarter, and they threw an interception, and now their running back fumbles again. Brian Robinson gets it, so there's our secondary again. That's at least three LSU turnovers already. So Stephen,
it's a big thing in you just remember the fourth quarter the way it turns out, but the third quarter was really like back and forth with each team taking turns shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, it was. You're right. That's true. So Stephen Davis has some big runs. At this point, he's 12 carries for 79 yards, 6.6 average. Okay, let's talk about this for a minute. If your running back midway through the third quarter is carried the ball 12 times for 79 yards against this defense, would you not give him a few more carries?
15 more.
I don't know that he carries the ball two more times in this game, and I don't think he was hurt. And they never said he was hurt. Did you ever hear he was hurt?
Give me a moment, and I'll give you his.
He looked great the rest of the season. If he got hurt, it sure was a sprained, you know, pinky or something, because he ran all over. I'm sure he had a good game against Florida. He had a good game against Arkansas that year. I remember clearly he ran all over Arkansas a couple of weeks later.
So right now we're at the end of the third quarter, right?
Yes. Well, we're almost to the end of the third quarter.
Almost to the third quarter, and he has 12 carries for 79 yards. He ends the game 15 carries for 83 yards. We always think about the malpractice on their offensive side, but this is the malpractice on our offensive side.
Wow. Well, to be fair, that means his next three runs went for, what, 4 yards total? But still, it's Steven Davis. You give the man the ball, and you try to get out of the way, you know. Come on. So, yeah, that's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable. And where's Fred Beasley? God, you got Steven Davis and Fred Beasley, and together they touched the ball about 16 times in this game. I don't get it. We do a shovel pass that would have gotten us something, and Davis does drop it to be fair to him. He does drop the shovel pass, so it's incomplete. So we're now 1-for-7 on third downs. LSU's only 3-for-12 on third downs, though. So together, this is sad, right? At this point in the game, Auburn and LSU together are 4 out of 19 on third down.
Punts and turnovers.
Punts and turnovers. That's what it should be called, yeah. Okay, so Jamie Howard hits a long pass to Kinnison. He's had a punt return, and now he has a catch. Down to the Auburn 35. The defense does rise up and hold them to a 45-yard field goal here. And so it's 13-9 LSU. So, again, we're getting close to the end of the third quarter, and it's only 13-9. Okay, so, you know, it felt like LSU kicked our butt all through this game, and yet they're only leading by 4 points as we get close to the fourth quarter. Now, Patrick Nix has an intentional grounding call where I'm like, surely you could find a receiver somewhere around the ball, but no. So another drive, pretty much. Now it's 1-for-8 on third down. Here's that big 34-yard Eddie Kinnison punt return. And this really, I mean, this is a big moment in the game, I think, because the intentional grounding, and so we have to punt from deep, and then Kinnison runs it back to our 27, and it feels like for a big section of this game here, they are in our end of the field a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Toomer scores, and he should be playing for. I got to file a protest with the powers that be. LSU had a running back named Toomer, and Oregon had a running back named Barner. Those young men both had no business not playing for Auburn. How are they both not playing for Auburn with those names?
A good one.
That's like if your guy's name was Sanford Hall, or his name was Foy Union. And he doesn't play for Auburn. What? Come on, man. There's no way you don't play for us. All right, let's see. So so it's 20-9 now. It's funny, how isn't it, how 13-9 seemed like a very close competitive score, and they just score one touchdown, and suddenly 20-9 feels like we're getting our tails beat. It's just, you know, psychological.
You're right. This is kind of when the wheels came off for Auburn. We were kind of hanging around at 13-9. But all of a sudden, they get the big punt return. They score, and then they kick off. Thomas Bailey fumbles the kickoff return, and we recover like at our own 6. That was a terrible series.
Yes.
And now we're down. You know, they're up big, and we're pinned down deep in our end of the field, and they're coming.
And now, you know, when you're pinned down deep and you're falling behind, now you put in your freshman quarterback that you don't even let pass. I think he'd thrown like 2 passes all season.
And they're not letting him run around either.
No. He's scrambling for his life and getting sacked. And it's hard to imagine. I feel like Damian Craig got hassled, harassed, and sacked more in this game than in the entire 1997 season put together, all 12 or 13 games.
Well, because in those games, he was in full command, and he would just run away from these people and make them pay.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, on this drive, they're so deep in our territory, Craig drops back into the end zone to pass, and it is an absolute miracle and a testament to his athleticism that we didn't get a safety called on us.
Well, I'm going to be honest. It was a safety. They just didn't call it.
Damian must have been like, have naked pictures of that referee, because every other bad call that went against us in this game. But he got this one in his favor, and he gets that fumble later in his favor, and I don't know how.
So let's just review. We blocked a field goal. They should have gotten a safety here, and we missed an extra point, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So LSU starts this drive on our 25-yard line. This was after we punted from the 4, and it's Terry Daniels' bad punt. A 21-yard kick.
Yeah, he shanked this one.
Yeah, so the greatest punter in Auburn history goes 21 yards, and LSU starts on our 25, and that, my friends, hang on, hold on for it, that brings us to the fourth quarter of the 1994 Auburn-LSU game. In other words, those of you that have been fast-forwarding, you can now hit the play button. So as the third quarter drew to an end, LSU is up 20-9. They have the ball on our 25-yard line to start the drive, And here are our stats through three quarters, John. We have LSU with 85 yards rushing to Auburn's 79. LSU has 186 yards passing to Auburn's 86. And so the total yards for LSU is 271. Total yards for Auburn, 165. So what was our offense after the Yes.
At the end of the first quarter, it was 101. That means in the second and third quarter, we had 64 yards total.
Oh, God. Oh, no. 60. Good God.
And so we had 64 yards, and we gave up a big punt return, and we had a fumbled snap or fumbled on a – basically dropped the ball on a kickoff return and recovered on our own five-yard line, and we shanked a punt.
You know what I say to them?
Blame yourself.
So here we go. We get a stop on the 25 and force them to kick a field goal. How big that would turn out to be, too. There's so many little moments, you know. But it didn't seem good at the time, because at the time that made it 23-9. And again, I mean, it's a difference of 10 points from when it was 13-9, but it feels like a world. It feels like we're in a deep, deep hole.
Again, our offense has scored 3 points. That feels like the ocean.
It does. 23-9 LSU. Craig comes in again. They're chasing. They're blitzing him every play. Incomplete passes. We punt. They almost block this one. And Kinnison brings it back up to their 30. All right, so we get a little flip of the field here. So far, Jamie Howard is 11 for 26 for 186. Now, by the way, this is what's funny, is that in 1994, an SEC quarterback going 11 for 26 with at least one interception, right? Yeah, one interception and two fumbles. That you look at that and go, he's having a pretty good game. And then, you know, I mean, 11 for 26 and for 186 yards in a game, you're up 23-9. You got to feel pretty good.
He gutted out a road win.
Yes, absolutely, man. So, all right. So here we go. Here's the first one. So Howard throws over the middle, and here's what I love about the fourth quarter interceptions. Every one of them is by a different player in that secondary. It's not like, you know, if it was the Cam Newton on defense or something out there doing it all by himself. It's each one of them gets one. That's just great, because it shows it's not that one player is dominating. It's that our entire secondary is just outplaying LSU's receivers and quarterback. I love that. So Ken Alvis intercepts it and runs it back. Is this the one where he got, like, tackled on the 5 and had to crawl in? One of them is like that.
Yes. It's this one. He's in the middle of the field at about the 5 yards on it. He gets hit, but he basically, like, puts his hand down so his knees don't touch and his hand is on the ground. And then he kind of dives forward into the end zone.
Yeah.
Again, another play that probably would have been reviewed, but he was knocked down and he got into the end zone. It was a great effort. The other thing about these interceptions we're going to talk about, that secondary, when they get the ball in their hands, they make great runs.
Oh, yeah.
This was a great play.
Yes. Absolutely. They all three of them turn into running backs or receivers. Yeah. Yes. And so, all right, let's look at this now. Yeah, I agree. If that had been an LSU player doing that, I'd have wanted a replay, and I'd have still sworn to this day that his knee was down the 5-yard line. Yeah. Or that some part – it's almost like it looks a lot like Michael Dyer against Oregon. He doesn't roll over like Dyer, but he's down so close to the ground that if you want to see him down, you can convince your mind he was on the ground. Of course, we didn't want to. We wanted him to score. But I remember at the time thinking, oh, they're not going to count that. And then like touchdown, I'm like, really? Oh, okay, sure, I'll take it, you know. So this is the fourth turnover for LSU already, the second interception, the first in the fourth quarter. And I honestly don't know if our offense would have scored a touchdown if he had been ruled down at the 5.
That's right. That's the other reason it was so big, because we were all thinking that.
Yes. Get in the end zone, man. Get in the end zone. There's no margin for error here. You got to get in. I mean, you know, if it had been me, if we had been at the 5-yard line there, I'd have put Nix back in. You know, I love Damian Craig as a quarterback, not so much as a coach. I love Damian Craig as a quarterback. But in this game, in this situation, I'd have put Nix back in. I'd have put Steven Davis and Fred Beasley back there. And I'd have pitched that ball 3 plays in a row and maybe 4 plays in a row to get it in the end zone.
100%, yes.
But he's Alvis scored. And so it's 23-16 LSU. And here's the funny thing. I made a note here that if Alvis hadn't stepped in out of nowhere and intercepted it, I think the guy that was actually covering the receiver would have intercepted it. It was like when Howard threw this ball, his intended receiver was like the third most likely person to catch it.
Oh, yeah. No, Alvis cut in front of the other Auburn player who was going to intercept the ball.
That's right.
Like there was 0% chance LSU catches this.
That was crazy. So the crowd, this really got the crowd back in it. It was like everybody, it was like a wake. It was church for a while there.
Well, but it was, again, it was the Jefferson Pilot game, so yes. 11:30 a.m. local kick, and we were losing to an unranked LSU team, and the offense was doing nothing. And now you could hear it in the broadcast. The crowd really started pouring on
it. Oh, I remember. I remember it got super loud there, but you're right, it was.
11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
It was, and it nearly was our death. But all right, so at this point, Howard is now 11 for 28, 186 yards, one touchdown and two interceptions. So if your quarterback, John, in the fourth quarter is 11 for 28, 186 yards the entire game, one touchdown and two interceptions, and you have a 23-16 lead, I'm thinking I'm running the ball the entire rest of the game and just happily punting it back to this offense.
Yes, just run the ball up and punt and make Auburn's offense beat you because they couldn't.
And again, it's amazing how much of a difference that gap makes. When it was 23-9, it felt like we were in the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. 23-16, still with our offense, you're like, you know, I don't know how we're going to do it, but I guess we were thinking maybe we'll have like a fluke long pass, or maybe Damian Craig will break loose, or maybe we'll run a punt back, you know, or something. You know, we felt like when it was 23-16, I know I did, I felt like it was still a possible win. We could still find a way to win the game, but I didn't think it was because our offense was suddenly going to go on methodical drives, you know, but 23-16 seems doable.
Something could happen.
It seems doable. And something, yeah. Okay, so LSU gets the ball back. And guess what? They throw over the middle again, and it's Fred Smith. And I feel like this is the one where he's running to the left, and he crosses in front and catches the ball, and then he has to, like, fight his way down the left sideline and dives in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so 23-23, and Howard has now thrown three interceptions, two of them pick sixes. And that is your fifth turnover for LSU, the second one in the fourth quarter. All right, so the Auburn kick coverage team comes out. They're fired up. All the momentum seems to turn around. There's 11 minutes and 2 seconds to go. I made a note here. This is kind of funny that Shannon Robeek's mother is interviewed in the stands, and she actually worked at LSU then. And I just think it's funny that her name is Shannon. His name was Shannon Robeek. There was ever a player other than LeFleur or something like that should be playing for LSU, it's Robeek. But we stole him out of Louisiana, remember? Wasn't he our center?
Mm-hmm. He was our center on that team, and he was from Louisiana. His parents lived in near Baton Rouge, and his mom worked at LSU.
And it was funny because she says something like, yeah, I was just telling myself, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter. LSU won and whatever. And she says, now I'm like, now I've got hope. Now I'm going to really be disappointed if Auburn doesn't win. So that was cool. So LSU goes on a methodical drive and gets all the way down inside the Auburn 5-yard line. And at that point, you know, they're chewing up the fourth quarter, and you think they're going to score here, and this is just going to be too much to come back from.
And I got it. When Howard is the guy that gets all the credit in this game, or one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But this drive, he's just thrown two pick sixes. He comes back and makes some plays.
He does.
Makes some big third down passes and leads them down the field.
He does. Absolutely. And, I mean, he keeps ripping it. You know, he never seems to – I don't know if well, let me put it this way. If his interceptions going forward from here are caused by a drop in confidence based on what's happened previously, then there's that. But on the other hand, he doesn't act like it's bothered him. He acts like, well, just brush it off and go back out there and sling it. You know, he doesn't seem like he's scared to throw the ball. I think Terry Dean was afraid to throw the ball before Spurrier took him out and put Werfel in a couple of, you know, those two games. I think Dean was like shell-shocked after we intercepted him so many times. But give Howard credit. I mean, he just rolls right back out like a gunslinger and keeps throwing it to us. I was wondering if he was colorblind in the fourth quarter. He thought he was playing for the blue team. But we hold him to a field goal. Again, this is huge. All these little moments that are not the offense, yes. Right? So it's 26-23 LSU, and there's, you know, you're down inside of 10 minutes to go in the game. And I'm thinking, man, I don't know if we can get three more points in this game. And Craig comes in. He's 0 for 2 for 0 yards at this point. And so I made a note. I've mentioned this before, that somewhere in here, he gets knocked down on the ground. He gets up, and he's looking over at Terry Bowden. And Terry's trying to signal to him. And an LSU player just, like, notices that he's standing between them. And so when Craig moves over to try to see past the guy moves again, and he moves like two or three more times, and finally he has to call timeout. Damian Craig or Bowden one had to call timeout because the LSU player was kept intentionally blocking. That should be a penalty.
I think it is a penalty now for sure, but at the time, I don't know if it was or not, or if the referees even noticed.
You don't see it on TV, and the commentators never mention it, but I was there, and I was sitting there in the student section watching it and going, oh, man, I've never seen this before. I was talking to people around me going, I've never seen this before, and there it was. That's the only time I've ever seen it before or since. All right, so Gabe Northern just sacks Craig, crushes him. Auburn is now 1 for 10 on third downs. And then Northern again, we just can't block him. He comes up the middle. Damian Craig is about to throw the ball, and Northern 100% absolutely knocks the ball out of Damian Craig's hand. His hand then goes forward, and the ball does kind of move forward. But if you watch the replay, there's no way that Craig's hand was moving forward when the ball was in it. I think the referee saw the ball moving forward after it came out of his hand and called it a pass, incomplete, which I'm glad they did, right? But if you watch the replay in slow motion, his hand is cocked back to throw it, and then the ball gets knocked out, and it gets knocked forward. But his hand moves forward well after the ball is gone. So if I were an LSU fan, I'd be raising fit about that.
Yes.
But we'll take it. Again, Craig had naked pictures of the referee, so he got away with it.
And again, no replay.
No replay, that's right. But I got to be honest, it was a fumble. Okay, so we punt, and so here we go. LSU has a 3rd and 4 at their own 32, and we're now down to 2 minutes to go in the game. I haven't seen the time of possession this game, but it's got to be like 40-20 LSU, surely, or 45-15.
It is 30, it's basically 38-22.
Okay, I don't know where we got our 22 from, honestly.
Mostly first quarter.
First quarter, yeah. So 3rd and 4 at the LSU 32, 2 minutes to go. If you run the ball up the middle here and punt, Auburn gets it back with less than 2 minutes to go, with no timeouts and, no offense. If you had a game tracker on the game right now, it would be 99.99% LSU wins this game, would it not?
Yes.
So what do they do?
Well, they don't run the ball to the middle and punt.
They do not. They arm punt.
Every Auburn fan in the stadium and watching on TV is thinking, throw it.
Yes,
throw it
please.
Again. Throw it again.
Please. We're all psychically influencing their offensive coordinator's decision. He looks down at his little sheet and he's like, run the ball up the middle. And he goes to call it. And all the psychic waves emanating down from the Auburn stands get in his head. And he's trying to say run up the middle. And he says, throw it over the middle. And Jamie Howard's like, really? They have so much confidence in me. This is awesome. My coaches believe in me. They know I won't do it again. And he does it again. Brian Robinson, touchdown Auburn. And I love it when Robinson runs into the end zone. He's got his arm raised up like in a salute because he knows, yeah. Right? I mean, that's it.
Ugh. He runs into the end zone with both hands up in the air, like making the touchdown signal, and just flips the ball backwards over his head.
He does. It's glorious. 6 turnovers, 4 interceptions, the 3rd interception in the 4th quarter, 4 defensive. We've scored 27 points off of 4 defensive takeaways in this game, 3 of them in the 4th quarter. It is now 30 to 26 Auburn. The offense has scored 3 points. The defense has scored 27. And honestly, it should be 28, but we missed an extra point. So even the special teams let the defense down. The special teams let the defense down. They still had to score an extra point in there. Okay, so then LSU comes out again, and you know what? They keep throwing. I mean, give LSU credit. They made up their mind that literally nothing was going to stop them from throwing the ball in this game. Nothing was going to stop
well,
them from
throwing.
They had
to. The script has flipped on them. They're behind.
Yeah, by four.
With less than a couple of minutes left, and they have to score a touchdown. They have to throw the ball.
Oh, man. The thing is, they have a gun to their head to throw the ball now. The last two times, they didn't. They had no reason at all to throw the ball on those last two drives. None.
Looking back at it again, this drive before this where Robinson intercepts it, I think their thinking was, if we get a first down here, then we can run out the clock and the game's over.
Yeah.
I think that's what they were trying to go for, the kill. And it didn't work.
So and if you really want to drill that down even deeper, we shut their running game down this entire game.
Yes.
If they could have run the ball for a first down there, I think they would have. Mm-hmm. I think it's that we took the run away. And so, we chastised them. Now, like you say, in that previous drive where Brian Robinson intercepted it, they didn't have to make a first down. See, I think this is overthink on their part. The LSU coaches have the book out. You know what I mean? They have the book on how to coach in the SEC, and the book says run the clock down more. But what you do is you throw the book out the window and say Auburn is not making a first down if we just punt it to them. They could That's have right. punted it to us on second down, and we wouldn't have won the game. They were going by the book. And by doing so, they were doing the only thing that could have won the game and lost the game for them and won the game for us. They inadvertently, by following the rules of football rather than just common sense that everybody else in the stadium but them understood, they did the one thing that would cause them to lose the game. It's amazing. It's amazing. So so Howard comes out and gets a big completion down to the Auburn 36 with over a minute to go. He then scrambles to the Auburn 25. So I'm starting to get nervous all over again because LSU is now on our 25-yard line with a minute 16 to go. I'm like, we're going to still lose this game. This is the game we had Pat on for We Believe. Remember your brother Pat?
Mm-hmm.
He was looking at his friend and saying, has a team ever lost a game when they have this many defensive touchdowns?
No, I don't think they ever have. He did bring that point up. And the other thing is the blocked field goal is huge here because it's a 4-point game.
Yeah.
Like you pointed out, the 25, they could have kicked a field goal and won the game.
Yeah, it would have been 30-29. All they needed was a field goal here. Yeah, absolutely right. But because we blocked that field goal at the very beginning of the game, they needed four just to tie. And so yeah, so let's see. So so they got down to our I lost my place. Okay, yeah, they were on our 25-yard line. Oh, this is the other interception. This is what confused me because it wasn't a touchdown. So we're on the 25 and they throw the ball and Brian Robinson intercepts it. Turnover number 7, interception number 5, fourth interception in the fourth quarter. Robinson runs it out to the Auburn 35, and then what happens?
He's stripped of the ball.
He fumbles it back to LSU. Oh, my gosh.
Everybody's like, get down, and he keeps running, and they strip the ball.
Well, we wouldn't have made a first down, but we didn't have any timeouts left, but I don't think they had any timeouts left either at this point. No, they didn't. They didn't have any timeouts left, so...
So all we needed to do was just kneel on the ball. If he'd have gone down, we'd have won.
And can you imagine if we'd still lost this game? After 5 interceptions, 4 in the fourth quarter. So, yeah. So, they have a great pass, a great catch down to our 32-yard line with 29 seconds left. No timeouts for either team. So, they got to hurry up. And what does Howard do now?
He throws it into the end zone.
Yeah, yeah.
Interception.
Tell me, though, honest to goodness, if Les Miles had been coaching this LSU team, that would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, that's the difference.
It would have.
Look,
his mystical powers that alter the time-space continuum, they would have scored LSU would have scored a touchdown and won the game there, because that's what happened when Les Miles would play us. But this wasn't Les Miles. This was Curly Hallman. I just don't have a lot of respect for a coach named Curly. I'm sorry. No offense. And so Chris Schelling intercepts it, and he, very smart, is a touchback. He's down. This is, all right, here we go. I've been doing this running total, right? Turnover number 8, interception number 6, interception number 4 just in the fourth quarter. And so we take a knee. I guess Damon Craig takes a knee, and it is 30-26. Auburn goes to 14-0 under Terry Bowden. I'm exhausted just talking about it. I was exhausted watching it again yesterday. I'm exhausted talking about it. What are your thoughts now that we've gone through the whole game?
It was an emotionally exhausting game because there were so many. It seemed like we had no chance. That things were just, the offense was doing nothing, and there were so many huge dramatic plays by the defense down the stretch. It was just incredible. I have a few numbers for you here.
Yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Auburn had the ball. Because of all those interceptions and the run backs, we only had the ball twice on offense in the fourth quarter. Okay.
Golly.
On those two possessions, we ran 6 offensive plays for 2 yards.
Wow. Okay, so we came from behind and scored 21 points in the fourth quarter on how many yards?
2.
Has there ever been a team? Now, wait a minute. Here's the weird thing. I think just a couple of years later, Mississippi State does the same thing, don't they, in a game against somebody? I feel like that team that had Fred Smoot on it.
Yes, they did something to somebody like this.
It's very similar, yeah. But I just can't imagine a team scoring 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter on 2 yards. God.
So once LSU had the lead, and this is from Justin Ferguson's article he wrote about this game a year or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
Once they had the lead, a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, they ran it 10 times and threw it 17 times.
Golly.
That is the part of this game that falls into the coaching malpractice handbook.
Oh, my Lord.
And that other coaches, like when you get a lead and you think about, you know, people fuss at you for being too conservative, this is the game they show you and say, no, be conservative.
Look at first downs. I just want to look at some of the numbers. Tell us the first downs LSU versus Auburn.
Well, the first thing is Auburn had the first downs by themselves are abysmal. I think Auburn was 1 of 12 on third down conversions.
1 of 12 the entire game.
1 of 12, and that one was in the first quarter.
Yeah.
So we went basically 0 for on third down the rest of the game.
God, unbelievable. They went 9 for 21, so not great, but not 1 for 12.
The other thing watching this game, I've forgotten how many times we turned the ball over.
Yeah.
I mean, the offense wasn't just bad in not getting stuff done, but we lost 3 fumbles in this game too.
Mm-hmm.
And we had terrible special teams plays again. We allowed a big kick return by them. By Kennison a couple times. We had a shanked punt. We had a missed field goal. We had a kickoff return where we fumbled it and recovered on our 6-yard line. So the special teams, they did block a field goal, and that ended up being big. But they were the rest of the game. They were a real weakness too.
I noticed they had 86 yards in punt returns. We had 0.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we averaged 3.1 yards per play in this game. The other thing that Justin Ferguson points out, which was true when I watched it again, those interceptions in the fourth quarter, Howard was not under a lot of pressure.
No.
It wasn't like he had Auburn defenders hanging off of him. They threw an interception. He was mostly in a clean pocket, and he just threw it right to us.
Oh, yeah. He just dropped back, looked around, and threw it right to the defensive back. I was just looking at something. Stephen Davis, 15 carries for 83 yards. How do you not give him more carries than that? Or Beasley, 1 carry for 6 yards. I mean, that's a 6-yard average. Why is he not carrying the ball more? I don't get it. But I want to see the LSU running backs. Let's see. Jermaine Sharp, 14 carries for 57 yards. Toomer, 19 carries for 53 yards. To me, that, you know, as much as anything, in the hidden statistics of this game, that's huge. That we held their two running backs to 50-something yards each. That's, I mean, they wouldn't have been throwing the ball, I don't think, if they were getting 6-7 yards a carry in the fourth quarter.
No, you're right. The other thing that's weird in this game is because we had so many run backs, they had a lot more possessions than we did.
Yeah.
So it ended up putting the defense back on the field more.
Well, you know,
that ended up, and that the end result of that was there were a lot of defensive players that were exhausted, and there were multiple Auburn defenders that had to get IVs after the game.
Wow, yeah. Well, here's a funny thing. They were 9 of 21 on third downs conversions, but how many of those 12 that they didn't ended up being Auburn touchdowns? In other words, almost every time it was third down for LSU, either they got a first down or we got a touchdown. There was not a lot of other, you know what I mean? There were not a lot of they just got stopped. It was something really big happened either for them or for us on almost every third down. That is hilarious. That is hilarious. I'm trying to dig into these numbers here and see. Let's see, Terry Daniel punted 8 times for 369 yards, average of 46.1, long of 52. So, yeah, he and his average would have been better if he hadn't put the 21-yard punt on our 25-yard line, I guess.
I want to ask, the other thing in this game was the move from Nix to Craig.
Yeah.
Like, we did it to get a spark, but we got nothing.
Nothing. It's terrible.
And almost, as we talked about, gave up the safety. And had the what should have been a fumble, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Craig could have easily cost us 9 points, except for the referee being very generous to him. Because if you squint your eyes the right way, that's a safety. And if you open your eyes completely, honestly, that was a fumble that LSU would have gotten the ball on like our 15-yard line. So, yeah, absolutely, and could have punched it in. So possibly. So. Yeah, we were very, very fortunate that Damian Craig, I mean, again, I love Damian Craig, and he certainly would be a much better quarterback in the future than he was in this game, but so would Patrick Nix. You know, I mean, they both would look a lot better in the future than they looked in this game, and neither one of them looked very good here. They were pretty terrible.
Yes. The other thing is I think about this game in terms of, like, the improbable, you know, like the most improbable Auburn victory, because let's put it into context, like we've talked about the kick six game, how we felt like Auburn would win in overtime, so that play was exciting, but it ultimately wasn't the decider. Like it didn't have to be the decider.
Yeah.
And you know, in some other, you know, in the Prairie Jordan Hare game, the offense had done a bunch of stuff earlier in the game, and we did have the ball in offense throwing downfield, you know, with a chance to win, and it wasn't a high percentage play. But, you know, in this game, the offense did nothing, and the other team was up 2 scores in the fourth quarter. I just think, like, there are not a lot of games where there was a lower percentage chance that Auburn was going to win, and then we did win.
I can't think of many games Auburn lost, other than maybe 2012, okay? I can't think of many games Auburn has lost that the offense looked worse than it looked in this win, because it had very little to do with this win. I mean, this is as bad as I've ever seen an Auburn offense look, particularly in the second half. Like I said, the first half, they looked like they were just on the verge of getting it going, you know? A break here, a break there, not get called for a bad penalty, not do an, you know, a grounding or whatever. They were really close with Nix and Sanders and Stephen Davis and Beasley and all in the first half. They were close to putting it together, and it would have been a competitive game till the end without the interception returns. I think that the game could have ended 30-26 without more than one interception return if the offense could have just kept doing what they were doing in the first quarter. It's like Terry Bowden seemed like he decided that the problem wasn't that they were just not quite executing. It was that he decided what they were doing wasn't working. They needed to just change the offense. And I feel like if I were the coach, if with the benefit of hindsight, of course, I would be like, no, don't change anything. Just stop making dumb mistakes. You know, we've heard Gus say before, you know, oh, we're so close. You know, it's like one play here, it's one thing here, one thing there. And when he says it, I don't always see it as clearly. But in this game, especially in the first quarter, you can see that they were like one player away from putting together a touchdown drive. Over and over and over, they were one mistake away from getting going. And it's just like they kept shooting themselves in the foot, and eventually it's just not going to happen. Do you want to hear some LSU Curly Holman quotes? This is great.
Absolutely.
This is most disappointed I've been in my coaching career. I felt we played defense good enough for anyone in the country. I was proud of the effort. It was good enough to contend with anyone in the conference. It's early in the season, and we can be a good team with this type of effort and by becoming mentally tougher. The players are hurting bad. They know they had a great chance to win. This is where coaching. Bringing players through this loss and helping them understand how I screwed them up. No, that's not what he said. Helping them prepare for the rest of the season. On the interceptions. Plain and simple, it was the difference in the game. Well, there's an insight on the loss. Everyone we brought on this trip knew we had a chance to win it. Hopefully we'll learn from it and get better. No. Hopefully you'll learn from it and get better, because you're honestly you and Jamie Howard are the only ones that really needed to learn something. I thought everybody other than the two of them and the offensive coordinator had pretty good games for LSU. Well, and the running backs were mediocre, but...
Yeah, but they weren't doing their job. I mean, it was the offensive coordinator, the head coach, and the quarterback that really let them down.
Yeah. Let's see. The middle linebacker. It's just incredible. I really don't know how to explain it. Auburn played a hell of a game. They played to the end. We didn't. I think we showed that Auburn's offense is less than perfect, and we showed them that we could score on their defense. Unfortunately, it was decided on a couple of fluke plays. Really? I can't explain it, says Jermaine Sharp. So there you go. Oh, and Eddie Kennison says the scoreboard showed differently, but we won the game. Well, Eddie, you can't turn the ball over 8 times and give up 3 interceptions for touchdowns in the fourth quarter and claim you won anything. Anything. Terry Bowden said you saw something historical tonight. We couldn't get a first down and couldn't move the ball. I don't know if I've ever seen a defensive performance greater than the one today. The offense could offer no assistance. Hats off, obviously, to our defense.
It's fair. But the other thing is, it goes back to this thing the 93 and 94 teams had, this kind of never say die. It's never give up. It's never over.
How many of the 93 teams' wins were comebacks? You know, they were down every game.
Yes.
And Terry says, our defense was better than their offense today. And I would say, Terry, your defense was better than your offense today. It's scoring by far better. So, wow. Let's see. Any other thoughts as we bring this one to a close?
Just that I wish that Twitter had existed back then, because Twitter absolutely would have lost it during this game. It would have melted down. Probably the entire app would have broken just because the huge swings, dramatic plays, but also the coaching decision-making by LSU to continue to throw the ball would have been just spectacular.
Absolutely amazing. Auburn Twitter would have immolated in a giant flaming pile. There would have been so many comments about the offense. You know, it would have been like for 3 quarters, it would have been screaming about how awful the offense was and fire Terry Bowden. And then the fourth quarter, it would just be people melting down over the defensive back scoring. It would have been like, again, are you kidding me? Is my Twitter broken? You know, and it's funny. Somebody on Twitter, we were talking about this the other day, somebody said how they were so that their reaction after this game was to be furious at Terry Bowden that the offense was so bad. And I said, and yet the weird thing is, a couple of weeks later, they go down to number 1 Florida in the swamp and put 36 on them. Our offense looked great against Florida. So who knows, man?
I got one email about this. I'm going to read you real quick.
Mm-hmm.
It was from Pat Ringer, who you referenced earlier from our earlier discussion about this game. And he said, I'll never forget this game. It was so memorable because the team had trained you to keep the faith even when it looked bleak. And it was really bleak.
It was. Yes.
And then he goes on to say at the end, it felt like the defense had that mentality and they weren't going to let it happen. They were sharks with blood in the water metaphor. It gets thrown around a lot, but it was very apt that day. The aggression from our defense was insanely high.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
The sharks with blood in the water is the right metaphor for the defense in the second half, because they had a bead on Howard and they were waiting for him to throw the ball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They knew what was coming and they were just like perched, ready to pounce. Absolutely. I want to mention a couple of, we got to thank the patrons here right quick before we go. I kept it till the end, but because we were kind of doing these off of our notes rather than off of our usual document. So I'm going to do the patrons in just a second, gang. But I wanted to point out, if you want to hear, you know, this is our detailed breakdown of the game like it was played over the weekend. If you want to hear like clips from the game and everything and our talking about it in that way and hear John's brother's thoughts on it too, it's the fifth episode of We Believed. All you got to do, you can probably find it on auwishbone.com. I mean, on the Patreon, on the... You can find it on the auwishbone.podbean.com page, but all you got to really do if you want to find it on your computer is just go to www.auwishbone.com, and it's right there at the very bottom of the page. I have the first five episodes linked right there, so you can play them off of that page. We've got to thank our patrons who make shows like this possible, and we appreciate you guys so much. And that includes Matthew Flowers, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Phil Amthor, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, William Morgan, Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Logan Chilton, Tom Anderson, Richard Stevens, William Glenn Matthews, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Richie, Clinton Stewart, Christopher Stewart, hey guys, Phil Davis, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, hey, you falling up? By the way, I'm reading them off the Patreon page, so I don't see the whole name, so I don't mess anybody up. I don't have the normal list I look at. Kevin Smith, Jeremy Minton, Winston Boddy, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Geary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Ann Kangian, Clay Henson, George Gaston, Catherine England, John McCune, David Evers, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Rich Reimer, Timothy Blake Heron. And then we have Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Rob Morgan, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Mike Finley, Wardam Wade, Randall Walker, Russell Millen, Chris Thrash, Earl Rick, Spanky Chris, Jason Albrick, J.W. Rice, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Trevor Johnson, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, that's the truth, Ruth, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, Brant Rumble, Justin Bean, we're almost to the end, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Mick Vigicana, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all so much. War Eagle, go to www.patreon.com. Look for Van Allen Plexico and White Rocket, or just go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the big orange box. All right, John, any last thoughts?
This was a really fun game.
Yep.
An exciting game. I'm glad we got to watch it again. One of the reasons that it really is appropriate is because the way the West Virginia game ended with all those interceptions led into this game, really. So
we have some
options for the next game. If there's a game that you want us to do this with in recent Auburn history that we have, you know, so pre-2012.
Yes, pre-2012.
That we'll do it. And so we're taking suggestions. We have some good ideas, some ones, or maybe we'll do a poll or something. But I'm excited and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think we have access now, if we need it, to games all the way back to basically the beginning of Pat Dye. So if you name something from like the 70s or 60s, it's going to be very problematic for John and me to even watch it. So it needs to be something we can actually watch, sit down and refresh ourselves. So, all right, man. Well, that was a lot of fun, and I guess we'll be talking in the days to come about what we'll do next. But there's certainly plenty of good options out there. So I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at AU Wishbone and at facebook.com/AU Wishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.